this sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita deals with yoga. It's one, maybe the most misunderstood word in Indian culture, is yoga. Everyone thinks that yoga, not everyone, a lot of people, thinks that yoga means stay healthy with your body, learning how to sit down, how to do certain things, breathing exercises. That is not yoga. That is just a small part of what is the real yoga. Yoga means devotional meditation. Devotional meditation is something that is done here to purify ourselves in such a way we can continue doing what we meditate upon in the spiritual world. So it's not something inactive, it's not inaction. It's just a preparation for the real action in the spiritual world. But to do this, you have to stop, like the Bhagavad Gita says, a very enigmatic verse, that sometimes people mistake action for inaction and inaction for action. So not so many people understand this verse. So whatever you do in the material world, that is action, but it is actually spiritual inaction. On the contrary, it's detrimental to the spiritual action. And when somebody renounces to this material world, stop acting in the material world, so material inaction, then he start actually the action in the spiritual world. And this begins with meditation. The whole sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is a description of various kinds of meditation. Actually, Krishna explains to Arjuna a very difficult yoga process. You sit down, first of all you have to renounce everything. Stop sex, stop smoking, stop the eating meat, stop going to the ballroom, you say, the dancing, these kind of places. Stop doing things that give pleasure to your senses, because that is not pleasure. That is just waiting for the misery that is caused by the pleasure. Pleasure and displeasure, they are directly connected. Once you enjoy, that enjoyment will cause your misery. It's mathematical, it's scientific. Action and opposite reaction. So the real yogi, if one wants to actually do yoga, he has to do something that we call vairagya. Vairagya means, rag means happiness, material happiness. And vai is a negation. No material pleasure. This is very smart, actually, doing that, because in this way you will not suffer anymore, because you will not enjoy materially. By stopping this process of action and reaction of so-called happiness and the corresponding suffering, you are going to start enjoying, first of all, the lacking, the missing of suffering. You find yourself in a situation where I'm not suffering anymore. So that's a pleasure, you know, not suffering. But then, when you start meditating, and then you want a positive pleasure, will not be enough anymore not to suffer. Not to suffer is a negative thing, it's a negation. I don't do this. But then, what do I do? We are spirit souls, we are active by nature. We cannot just not do anything, we have to do something. So this doing something, it's for the meditator, for the yogi, will be something internal. And internally, don't think that internal activities are not actions, because Most of our activities during the day, we do it with our mind. We think more than we do things. We don't act as much as we think, as much as we feel, as much as we look, as much as we... If you could count all the sensorial activities, you would arrive at a certain number that is hundreds times, thousand times higher than any physical activities, if you could measure the activities that you do with your blunt, gross physical senses. So, someone who sits down meditating is actually very, very active. So Sri Krishna, the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, is describing a very difficult process. You sit down, first you have to renounce material activities, material pleasure, and you sit down in a certain way, and then you have to breathe in a certain way, you have to regulate your sensorial activities, for instance. You have to learn how to breathe, you have to learn how to eat, you have to learn how to sleep, you have to learn how to speak, learn how, so many things. It's a science. But at the end of this description, Arjuna didn't seem very satisfied and said to Krishna, "Oh, this is very difficult, I'm not going to make it, I'm not going to do it." And Krishna, there are two questions that Arjuna does poses to Krishna in this chapter. The first one, it was not really a question, it was like a proposition. He was saying, "Krishna, that's too difficult for me. Because the mind is more difficult to control than the wind. Try to control the wind and see if you can make it. You can't." And so it was not really a question, but Krishna took it as a question. He said, "No, it's possible. It's very difficult, but it's possible." Actually, Krishna, by saying that, he was saying it that maybe this particular type of yoga doesn't fit to you. You cannot make it. But the same type of yoga can be applied to different people in different ages. The same principles with certain particular, I can say it in my language. For instance, in this age, it is possible to meditate, but it's very difficult to pretend that a person goes, that everybody goes on the Himalaya, you know, and get into some cave. And that is not possible. You stay there for hundreds of, we don't live 100 years anyway. But we can meditate. But since we are weaker compared to the yogis in other ages, the object of meditation, the tool that allows us to meditate, must be more powerful than any other things they were meditating in the past. In the past, they were meditating sometimes in a principle that is a philosophical principle, sorry for doubling the word, it's very complicated to explain it, we don't have time today, but they would meditate on principle, on a quality, or sometimes they would meditate simply staring the tip of the nose, you know, they would, you try to look at the tip of your nose, and why they would do that, I explained it this morning in the Hindu temple, that everything else all around you, it blurs out. If you look at the tip of the nose, you don't see anything else but the tip of the nose. You have to be very concentrated. Then there are mantras. Mantras are very important, actually. They are spiritual sounds, spiritual names. But since we are very qualified, we need a very powerful mantra. And now we are going to talk about how to meditate today. Then there was a second question that Arjuna made to Krishna. And Arjuna, since he was a little discouraged, and he was thinking, "Well, I don't make it, Krishna is saying I will make it, but I still doubt that I will make it, I will fall down, Arjuna. If I fall down, what happens to me?" And so Arjuna poses a question to Krishna, saying, What happened to me if I fall down? What will happen? And Krishna said, don't worry. Whatever you did will not go lost. Next life, you'll begin again, exactly from the same point where you left. Now, we want to do yoga, because yoga is a system, yoga, huge, from the Sanskrit word, the Sanskrit root, huge, which means to link. We want to do yoga, but we want to do a yoga that is possible to us. So to what yoga can we do? So first of all, we still have to regulate the activities of our senses. So we have to regulate, for instance, our sleep. We should not sleep after a certain time. That is scientifically proved, that after a certain time comes nightmares. Nightmares comes only after 3:30. There was a very precise research made by a group of scientists proving they had a group of people, you know, sleeping in their places, and they would put some kind of, I don't know how you call it, in their heads to measure what they were sleeping, and the nightmares comes only 10% after 3:30 in the morning. From 10 o'clock to 3:30, cleaned sleep. Very clean, very peaceful sleep. So that is the time when we should sleep. After 4 o'clock, 4:30 at most, we should get up, take a very nice shower, be cleaned, and go to our meditation. That's the best way to start the day. The whole day becomes bright when you start in this way. If you sleep and get up at 8 o'clock, the whole day is like, oh my God, you know, another one of these days. Very depressing. That's an experience we have made many times in our life. And eating, we should not eat too much, we should not eat too little, we should be vegetarian. And we should take profit also of the eating that is so important for us, not only for the life of our survival of our body, but also because it is one of the pleasures of life. We cannot deprive ourselves of all the pleasures. We can't, that's impossible. Then we should offer the food that we eat to Krishna on the altar. You can, all of you, you can have a little altar in your house, you know, like this, even smaller. And every time you cook, after you cook, you just take your food, the plate of your food, you offer it to Krishna with very simple mantras. You can learn the mantras, so you can just chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Of course, if you want to learn the mantras, we are here at your service to teach it to you. But if it's too complicated, then do it in this way. And then you start your meditation. Meditation is better conducted if your body is clean, as I already said. Take a shower in the morning, and then wear clean clothes. Possibly not the same clothes that you wore the day before. And you sit down, or you can also walk. Sit down, seated meditation is better. But it's not compulsory. In other sense, you can also walk. And you can have one rosary, like this, that is called mala. And the act the way of there are many ways of chanting Hare Krishna. One of these ways is called japa. Japa comes from the Sanskrit jap, which means to murmur. Murmur? To say it low, very low. Okay, so japa, the art, excuse me, the art of chanting japa on the mala is called japa mala. Chanting Hare Krishna on the beats in a very low voice, just enough to be heard by you. You should not scream it. It's not that you should not scream it, it's just not necessary to scream it. Just enough to hear it. Chanting japa is the most wonderful experience in life. it just gives you a wonderful internal experience of communion with the Lord. It just, because it's private. It's just you and the Supreme Lord. So it's very private. Sometimes when we chant all together, kirtan, which is very important, also kirtan, there is also a lot of sociality going on. You know, faces, and you look around, this chants too loud, this, that, I don't like these people, I don't like that, you know? So there may be some elements of disturbance of your meditation, because kirtan should be just, you know, to please the Lord, you know. Yes, with the loud chanting and nice playing the instruments and dancing. This is very nice, but japa is very private and very, very tasteful, very nice. And how you do it? That is very, very simple. You shouldn't touch the mala with this finger. for traditional reasons. This finger was used in ancient times to throw curses. And also, normally this finger is being used for, you know, touching yourself. And now with your left hand, because left hand is the hand with which you clean yourself. You know? So right hand with this one, and in this way, you put your finger here, and just say Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One. Then Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. So beautiful. It's just divine. If you can just put your attention on the sounds, and then you will start to feel great, great pleasure. But I already know what will happen. In a few tens of seconds, your attention will go away. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Yeah, today I have to go to the post office. Seconds, I guarantee you. Then what you should do? Then you should, okay, no, I will think to the post office after. Now, I take my mind and I put it again in the mantras. And again, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Such aristocracy, such a beauty, such a nobleness of thoughts and emotions that you can feel just by chanting Hare Krishna. And then your mind again, oh, I have to go to the doctor and my daughter did that, and you shouldn't be doing that. And bring it back. Again, this is the struggle for purification. It's a struggle. But it's not that the best thing that you can imagine, it comes without the struggle. Even to make a little bit of money to survive, you work the whole of your life just to survive. Something that any living being in the planet, except human beings, does without having to work the whole day. Just eating, having a place to sleep, and have some security. Every living being in the planet does it and obtain it without great effort. Only human beings, they created a very complicated social system by which just to survive you have to work the whole day, the whole of your life. And a man is successful if can just survive. That is a successful man. Then, if you want liberation, and more than liberation, liberation from what? Liberation from suffering of this material life. But that is not enough. Because, we are souls. We are active. It's not enough not to suffer. We want to enjoy. We want to be happy. Then for that, you need devotional service. You chant Hare Krishna with a consciousness of being glorifying Lord Shri Krishna and engage in the devotional service. a devotional service means. You come to the temple, never come like Indian, they know, you see, I don't know what is that, but if it's some offering for the temple, yes, you see, because it's an Indian culture. In India, you go in India, nobody goes to the temple empty-handed, nobody. It may be even a bottle of water, it may be one apple, it may be anything, but something when you come to the temple, a flower, just pick, you don't need to buy it, just pick a flower on the street and bring it to the Lords. So this is the culture, because what Krishna appreciates is not the apple, or he is the Supreme Lord, yes, everything, he doesn't need your apples, but what he wants is the fact that you thought to give him something. Just like the other time that we gave a lecture, we were talking about relationship within parents and children, and sons or daughters, whatever. So sometimes son or daughter, they will. My son used to do that. Every time I had my birthday, he would steal money from me, and which I would put it there just so that he could steal it, so that he would go to buy something for me. That's my money. It's not that he's giving me something that he is own. But the fact that he was thinking, now I will give a gift to Peter, then it made me extremely happy, because I wanted his love. So the same way, everything that we can do, everything we can give to Krishna, a little fruit, a little water, anything, belongs to him. So there is nothing we can actually give him. But what he appreciates is that while we take this thing, we are thinking, now I will give it to Krishna. This is devotional service. And then when you come to the temple, you should have your ID. You know, just like when we have our ID, there is name and surname, your age, and you have your occupation. So occupation is very important in devotional service. What are you in the temple? Then you should be in charge of this half square meter of temple. Every time you come to the temple, you clean that. Only that. That's a small thing. So that you can be, you can identify yourself as a bhakta, as a devotee. And that is your devotional service. It is so, it will change your life if only you have whatever small service you can do for the temple. But that's yours and you do it always. And you have in mind that you are going to do this small service for Krishna the rest of your life. That will change your spiritual life forever. Because in that moment, you are not anymore a guest coming to Krishna's temple. You are a devotee. Why? Because you have a small service for Krishna. So, what is yoga? Yoga is to relink ourselves to Krishna. Huge. Yes, it's a Sanskrit root. Huge. To link again to Krishna. And how do you do that? The last verse of the Bhagavad Gita, or the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, is extremely clear. The one who serves me with love and devotion is the highest of all yogis. So you try to do in the Himalaya, you try to do big austerities, and you try to do big things, or maybe to give so much money in the at the temple, you can give $1 million to the temple. But if you give it with the idea that now Krishna will give me back $2 million. In India it's very common. There are people who give vast amount of money to temples and they get it back. They get it back because there is a universal law regulating these kind of things. The more you give to the temple, and the more you get back in terms. This is karma. This is called karmakanda. Karmakanda is a mechanical reaction of giving and taking back. And everyone in India knows this. I remember going shopping in India, especially in Delhi. I had this man who would sell me computers, so I would go there for doing things quite often. So I would go there very early in the morning so that I would be the first customer, so that I could go very quickly back to my Vrindavan. And immediately I would enter as before, and then he had this Ganesh and Diti, and then he had all these Lakshmi Ditis and Shiva Diti, but especially Ganesh Diti. And he would do all his puja, and all the customers were waiting there. And he was doing, as a big man with $1 million, you know, doing this Ganesh. And then I said, so you give to Lord Ganesh, one incense. How much he will give you back? He said, today will give me back $20,000 because of this incense. He would tell me that. It was like a joke between him and me, that every time I would go there, I would tell him that, and he would say, $20,000. This is Karmakanda idea. It's not bhakti. Even if you give it to Krishna, that is not bhakti. Because you give it to get something, this is business. The real devotional service is to give just to give. Doesn't matter if Krishna will give you back or not. Sometimes it doesn't. Krishna is not the most generous god in the pantheon of Hindu gods. It's not. If you want to make money, worship somebody else. Because Krishna sometimes will not give you back. Because he wants to teach you bhakti. He wants to teach you love. You don't give something to your beloved to get something back. That is not love. That is business. I give you because you give me back. So yoga and Krishna does not allow people with personal interest back to his abode. No, he will allow only people who love him purely. That those people will go back. That is, though, and because of this, they are yogis, because they will get what they want by loving with pure devotion Lord Sri Krishna. Then you get more than liberation. You get the full spiritual life in the transcendental world. So this is basically the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. In the beginning, Krishna was talking about something else pertaining to the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, part of the second part of the second chapter, the whole third chapter. He was talking about Karma Yoga. So Krishna was continuing, took again the topic, but this is very technical. And today I just wanted to explain something about yoga. To conclude, to leave, hopefully, to many questions, you know, I wanted to say that next month we'll begin a Yoga Sutra study course here in San Antonio. Yoga Sutra is like the Bhagavad Gita, but it's another perspective or the same objective. So it was written many, many years ago by Lord Brahma's grandson, which is called Patanjali. He was a great sage. So we are going to give this study course. Whoever wants to participate is welcome. And so just wanted to say that. And now who has a question, please, is welcome again. No questions. Wow, my God.
I just wanted to add, you know, the correct word for what people do here as yoga is asanas. So, you know, wherever you go, if you can propagate this, because I didn't understand what you say. For the confusion of the physical exercise,
yes,
which is only 1/1,000,000th of the big subject of yoga. And unfortunately, that's what is being related as yoga. So if, you know, people like you, you meet hundreds of people, you can emphasize the word, you know, asana, which is also important, you know, that would be good. At least in this country, in the United States, it's a complete mess, you know. Yoga is being messed up. In India, it's not so. People understand what is yoga and what is asana. Like those who have gone on that path. But here, you know, because it's being commercialized, and then it's hybrid yoga and speed yoga and I don't know what not names I see. So that's a little strange. So I don't know how that
yes.
is corrected. I keep wondering.
This system of yoga, well, because if they would say what yoga actually is, nobody would do it.
Nobody will do it.
No, because they don't know that asana without everything else all around, even from the physical point of view, it's totally useless to do asana with meat. You're not going to do anywhere. You're not going to go anywhere with that. You have to be vegetarian. You have to learn how to breathe. Asana is one of the 8 steps of a yoga system that is called Ashtanga yoga. Ashta in Sanskrit means 8. Anga means limbs. Ashtanga yoga is a quite complex technical a system that we'll explain in these study courses. And asana is just only a part. And even the asana is not only how to sit down. There is not asana, only that. Even asana means to sit down. But it's not enough just to sit down.
But there are close to 500 postures in asana also.
That's right.
That itself is a vast subject. Even that is shrunk down to some 8-10 postures.
Yes.
In the process of...
You have to learn how to sit down. You have to keep your back straight. The palm of your hands should be up to the sky and united so that the prana can circulate correctly, and you have to stare the tip of your nose, and your neck must be in the right line, and the knees have to touch the ground, and so that's why the Padmasana is the best of all. It's one of the best, actually. It's not the best only, because only with Padmasana you can touch the ground with your knees. And and then there is also a more subtle way of manipulating the air inside the body. It's very complex. Very complex.
You said we can walk and meditate. Did you say that?
Yes.
How do we do
yes.
that?
In India, actually, there are many mats, which means schools, which prohibit walking while meditating, while doing Japamala. In India, they have this kind of road, and on the top there is something like that. Have you seen it? Whoever has been to India has seen it. Whoever has seen it that. Anyway, while sitting down, they have it on, and they put their arm on it, and they don't even move the arm. They are so strict. Our school, ISKCON, this wonderful movement founded by Srila Prabhupada, comes towards the people, trying to arrange. And look that any system is not that just by practicing the system automatically you succeed. You succeed only through Guru Kripa. In other words, which is the pleasure of the spiritual master. So let's say that you are initiated in a school and you like the system practice in another school. You don't do any advancement. Because it's that you do advancement through the guru, not about the system itself. The system is a practice that you have to do thanks to the blessing of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is very, very important because it represents Krishna. If you do a system in another school of another tradition without the blessing of the guru, you don't go anywhere. Or maybe I should not exaggerate by saying that you don't go anywhere. You do some advancement, of course, but it is not as fast as if you could get the blessing of the guru, of the spiritual master. So in our movement, I stayed with Srila Prabhupada personally for some time, and he would walk while chanting. He would get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, every morning. It was like incredible. You know. He would go to sleep about 11, 12, midnight, more or less, between 11 and midnight, every night. He was so precise, so punctual. He was like a Swiss watch. You know. 2 o'clock. I know this because my service at that time was being the guard of Srila Prabhupada's door, where he was staying, of his rooms, of his quarters. So I would stay there day and night, because if I would leave my service, somebody else would come and won't give it up. So I would lose my service to my spiritual master, 1 week without sleeping. But I was 20 years old, I could do this and more than that. So so Srila Prabhupada would, I would sit through the keyhole watching my spiritual master chanting japa, and he was extremely composed, well, very serious. Srila Prabhupada won't laugh so much. He would smile sometimes, very, very composed, very serious, very... There is another word, it's called sober, very sober. And chanting, he was chanting, walking up and down in his quarters. So I would see him do that, and also the other devotees doing guard in the garden. Because we were in France at the time, you know, we were talking about 75, 76. At the time there was a lot of, in Europe, I don't know here, but in Europe there was a lot of political violence in Europe. So near, close to our community, there was a community, you know, quite strange community of strange people coming to the temple sometimes, and we received some. So we would protect the Prabhupada by having groups of people. So the devotees down in the garden, they would look in the windows, seeing Srila Prabhupada chanting his rounds. He was very serious and chanting, and you would feel the weight of his concentration of these names. It's just an incredible experience chanting Hare Krishna or watching such a pure, exalted personality chanting japa mala in the morning. So you can walk, you just walk and chant, and try not to be distracted by people or by other, you know, by things, and just concentrate on the names. In the beginning, don't try to think to the forms of Krishna, or if you want, you can do it, but the real system is just to concentrate on a sound, because the sound will purify you. Then one day, through your purified heart and mind, then you will be able to envision the real spiritual form of the Lord in your mind. Not that you will see Krishna personally in the beginning or in the middle stage of your meditation, but you will be able to the pictures, etc., to visualize Krishna in a more purified state of mind. Otherwise, in the beginning, there will be much sentimentalism, much emotionalism, much speculation. That is not the beginning. Better you just concentrate on the name. When you say Hare Krishna, you hear Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You just hear your name, your mind again, go away, you take it back. Yes, Mataji?
Someone who doesn't know anything about the mantra, for you telling someone who's just like now, just now being introduced to it, how would you explain the meaning of why we chant Hare Krishna, and what does it mean? Like, I guess to put it simply, for someone who's just now introduced.
Mantra Hare Krishna is composed of three names of Krishna. And why Krishna has three names? Actually, Krishna has got many names. Actually, Krishna hasn't got any name. They are all adjectives. Adjectives that refer to his qualities, and since Krishna's infinite qualities has infinite names. So the quality of Krishna being very attractive, because it's beautiful, because it's this, because it's that, then it's Krishna. Krishna means attractive.
But who's Krishna?
Huh?
For someone who doesn't even know who Krishna is.
Like Krishna's God. Then Rama. Rama means pleasure. It's the quality of Krishna being happy and being able to give happiness to others. You chant Hare Krishna and you become happy like Krishna. And then Hare is actually, these three names are in an evocative mode. You know what vocative is? Like say, this is classic grammar. So if you want to say, for instance, a subject is called nominative, and an accusative is the complement. I don't know how to say this in English, I'm sorry. So when you want to say somebody like in a poetry, oh, you are so beautiful, this is called vocative. Okay? So Krishna and Rama are names that finish with A and are masculines. So the vocative of masculines, of masculine names, finish with A, remain A. That's why Krishna and Rama are Krishna and Rama. Hare, it's different because it's feminine. It refers to the feminine aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's actually Srimati Radharani. And it's his devotion, it's his love. So because it's feminine, invocative becomes Hare. So Hara, oh Hara, becomes Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare, oh Krishna, oh Rama, oh Hara. This is the mantra. Are three names of God. And you refer to them chanting this mantra. Why we chant this mantra? We chant this mantra because we want to be devotees and we want to live our life in Krishna consciousness. If you chant these mantras, your life will be really sublime, as our spiritual master used to say. So we like our lives to be sublime, and that's why we chant Hare Krishna. You know, we have the Christians saying some songs. We have our songs. Every religion, there is no religion in the world who does not sing the glories of God. What devotee are you if you don't sing the glories of God? That's the whole thing of being a religious man. So we do the same. Yes.
Thank you very much. I really like that Krishna has no name. Well, actually, no, God has no name, but then on the other side, he has infinite names. and the best of those is Krishna.
If you think it a moment, all names of Krishna, they make Krishna very appealing. You know, like Rama. Who doesn't like someone who is always joyous? You know, Janardana. Janardana means Jana and Dana. Jana means people, and Dana means very kind or very generous to people. That's the name of Janardana. So, who doesn't like someone who is so generous? You know, and Rishikesha. Rishika, Isha. Rishika has the senses. And Isha means controller. Who doesn't like someone who is so sober, who can control his senses? Is someone you like to be with. Because nobody likes to be with some crazy man who any moment can get angry or can do crazy things. He's very attracted to be someone who can control himself. So Rishikesha means this one. And Keshava. Keshava means Ka Isha. Ka is Brahma and Isha is Shiva. Eva refers to being devoted to. You know, then ka isha keshava. Keshava means someone who is worshipped, but even Brahma Shiva. You know? And then there are thousands of names, and you can see that all these names, you, when you think to this meaning of these names, you think, wow, that's beautiful, incredible. You know, and Vishnu, what it means, Vishnu, Vish, means abode, is the abode of every beings. So it's attractive. So the supremely attractive being, that all these names put together, the result of putting together all these names is infinite, a perfect attraction. And this is why Krishna is the first and most important names amongst the billions and trillions of Krishna's names. Kri-karshati. That means to attract. Kri-karshati, that's the Sanskrit root of the name Krishna.
And my question is, so Krishna being all attractive, in a dynamic bhakti or the devotion, as you explained, that it's not business, but it's simply about giving and receiving. How is one to understand when Krishna does not reciprocate the way we perhaps expected, or what is the best, I guess, mentality to have while we're doing our square foot or whatever our duties are? What is the best mindset to have in terms of Krishna will reciprocate, but it might not be always the way I expect it or want.
Let's say you are a small child and you want to please your father or whoever, mother, friend, or wife, whatever. So you have something, and you buy something, you give it. You buy something for $100, let's say. You go to this beloved, you give the gift, and this person, oh, you gave me a gift, $100. Okay, take the $100. How would you feel? You will feel really bad. Why? Oh, because you wanted just to give a gift. You don't want to be paid for this gift. It was love. It was something for love. So Krishna does not give back, not to spoil our services, so that our services remains pure in such a way that we don't get spoiled. Saying, okay, Krishna, you know, I gave to Krishna without interest, but he's giving me back. So, well, you know, I will do this other one thing. I don't want anything, Krishna, but in the deep of your heart, you start to want something because you see Krishna is reciprocating. So Krishna is training us up differently from other demigods who will give you automatically, like Ganesh and Shiva and Lakshmi and Brahma and so many. While you do the five sacrifices, Agni will give you, and Indra is present, and all the demigods are present. Every time you do Agnihotra, you know, they will give it to you, but not with Krishna, because Krishna is training you up. It's not a mechanism, bhakti with Krishna. So he, what is the 8th verse of the Sikshastaka? Help me with the first one. Aslishava padaratam binastu mam mama hadarshanam karotu va yatatata va bidadatu lampato ma prananatastu sahevanapara. That is not Sanskrit, that is Bengali. So, it's what he's saying. This is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his one incarnation of Lord Krishna, 500 years ago. He's saying, I don't care if you respond to my call, or if you treat me well in my life, or you just like my life miserable, you know. No matter what you do, mat prananata, Mat pranahata means you are mat, mine. Pranahata, the Lord of my life, no matter what you do. You know, sometimes we see, even in our lives, even the devotees, they sometimes get results. They do big preachers, they get disciples, or they become temple president, they get money and people giving. And sometimes they don't get anything for years. Even Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual master, he was totally unsuccessful until his 70s years of... I would like to tell you the story of my spiritual master before coming to the West. There is no time today, some other time. I can also relate to you, if you so wish, some past time of my spiritual mother that I witnessed this. Anyway, my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, when he came to the West, he had no money, he had no followers, he had nothing, completely. He has been total failure the whole of his life from the material point of view. And 10 years only, boom, like this. But he, apart from the fact that he was a pure devotee, of course he doesn't get drunk or power and prestige because he was a pure devotee. But try to imagine a normal person, like a very nice devotee. Very nice devotee who is very humble and very serious, and then he starts to have so many followers, so much money. It's so easy to fall down. It's so easy. So Krishna trains up his devotees so that one day, if he needs some, well, he needs, let's say if he wants the sun devotee representing in great opulence, then he is ready, because he trained them, he trained the devotee. So to conclude, this is a great science. It deals with God's psychology, a human psychology. There is the material psychology, spiritual psychology. And so there is a lot to learn, a lot to, and this is the beauty of this philosophy. Okay, so seems like we have 5 minutes more because Prasad is coming now, which is still boga. This is called boga. This food before being offered is called boga. In the following seconds it will become prasada, because he accepted the food. And then we can partake of this food because it's spiritual, spiritualized. There is matter, there is spiritualized matter, and there is spirit. Prasada is spiritualized matter. Like the temple. This is bricks. No, in America you don't use bricks, you just pieces of woods, you know. They are not houses. Anyway, whatever it is, this is metal, it's just wood. But since the devotees, they use it in Krishna service, then this is spiritualized matter. I remember you, this is the third time that you come, or fourth? That you, yeah.
I've been coming for about a year. Not every
really?
Sunday, but I come, yeah.
Oh, that's, you were talking about your daughters. You have two daughters.
One
and another one. I have a good memory, you see?
First time she comes on Sunday.
Oh, really? Welcome. What's your name?
Michelle.
A beautiful name.
Like Isha Parisha.
Okay, so if there is no other question, I would close here. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.